Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Page 94, the Private Eye Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Page 94. My name's Andrew Hunter-Murray and I'm here in the iStudio with Helen Lewis, Adam McQueen and Saba Salman. We are here to discuss the news of the last couple of weeks, and because it's Christmas party season, we're having a Christmas party special. I haven't told you all this, but we're going to be talking about your party, we're going to be talking about the Reform Party, and later on we're going to be talking about various corporate parties who are buying each other.
So I thought for a horrible moment it was going to be like a normal Christmas party where everyone was going to fall out with each other and, that is what it is. Yeah.
So, Saba, welcome to Page 94. This is your first time on the show. And you are the new Tim Minogue.
I am. It's seamless, don't you think? I don't think anyone would see any difference at all.
You're Rotten Boroughs.
I am Rotten Boroughs. Me and a whole host of people behind the scenes who we cannot name.
I saw something really exciting recently, because I know you do a little Reform roundup section, given that Reform have just taken so many councils across the country in the local elections. I saw a really exciting headline saying they've managed to cut £331 million of expenditure in total so far. Terrific news. How have they done it?
Well, I think the answer is rhetoric over reality.
Right, actually. Okay.
So, yes, Reform has control of 10 local authorities. They have been shedding councillors left, right and centre, or right, should we say, since they started. And they've lost about 40. And Rotten Boroughs has indeed, on behalf of the nation, been keeping an eye on how many and why. The war on waste that you mentioned, so this £331 million saving efficiency, that is their big mantra nationally, and obviously in local government they've taken that upon themselves to prove to Nigel that it can be done. When you actually drill down, this is complete guff, basically, to put it in technical terms. In the current issue, we mention Kent. Kent is fascinating because it's the flagship borough. The person in charge is Lyndon Kemp-Caron, who's a very firm leader, and she's very big on taking Nigel's word to the absolute maximum. So she's been doing her war on waste, and she's claiming she's saving tens of millions. They've cut councillors' allowances by about 5%, which is great. Sounds brilliant, very generous. But actually what they've done is they've used that money and they've put it into the community fund, which again is fabulous because it's more money for local people.
So what's the community fund?
A community fund is all local authorities have a fund which councillors can use to give money to good causes. So local projects, you know, kids, animals, nice, warm, fluffy things, important things. But the point here is that by cutting councillors' allowances, which is a good thing, that could be an efficiency. It's not, because actually that money's being siphoned off into this community fund. So it's not a saving.
I presume it's because they can't underspend that money? Is that it? As in they have to put it somewhere rather than...
They do. I mean, local authorities, as any organisation, you have a certain amount of money and you have to spend it within the year. So I think as you get towards the end of the financial year... Right. You're left with these pots of cash. I'm not sure if that's the case in this Kent example. I think it's more the case that it makes a great headline.
Right.
Can I just ask a really basic question there? Where does the money come from? Is it all from council tax? Is there still some money that comes from central government?
There is money that comes from central government, although successive governments have kind of cut that. So by and large, yes, it's from council tax.
Did Reform experience the thing which I think, Adam, you predicted when they got all those councils, which is that they went in going, it's terrible, it's all being spent on putting the trans flag above the town hall, and then they discovered, oh no, all the money's going on adult social care.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. With Reform, they've come in guns blazing, it's a political earthquake, it's going to be fabulous, we're going to do all this, we're going to cut this, we're going to get rid of EDI because it's so expensive, and you know, we're going to stop spending on special educational needs, we're going to stop, take money from adult social care. Doesn't quite work like that, because local authorities have a duty to provide certain things and do certain things.
Now, can I check? There's been an accusation levelled against the BBC that Reform are targeting its councillors in particular by reporting on all of the councillors who are sacked or resign or defect, perhaps. Now, are you doing the same thing? You know, they've said, well, the BBC are reporting on 90% of Reform councillors who leave in some way or another, and actually only about 15% of Labour or Conservative councillors doing the same.
I think there is a balance between a focus on this particular group of individuals because they have stormed in and they are presenting some wild and wacky ideas, and you have to hold them to account in a balanced way. Mm. We can't do the same thing with all the other parties simply because we actually do that in the rest of the borough's page.
Right.
Isn't it also the fact that because Reform have only got a handful of MPs and have never formed a government in any of their various Farageist iterations, this has been the first real chance to see what the party makeup is like and also how well they handle actual government responsibility. In the same way that the Green-controlled council in Brighton for a long time got, not an excessive amount of scrutiny, but a higher level of scrutiny, because this was a chance to see for people to see what the Greens would be like in government, which they weren't going to be able to do at the national level. So if Reform are currently top of the polls, which they have been on and off for months now, Nigel Farage is auditioning to be the next Prime Minister, and this is our chance to see what are his ground troops.
Yes, quite interesting. The last election, the complaint was constantly, Reform don't get the coverage they ought to, and actually there's an awful lot of support out for them. But
I think there is definitely something about, particularly with councils like, Kent being the flagship one, that this is the party of government potentially. So there you have it. If this is what they're doing on a local level with infighting, conduct problems, the leader effectively firing a bunch of her councillors. That was Lyndon Kemp-Caron, yes, in Kent. They had 57 councillors elected. There's now only 48 left. So 9 have gone. So my highly analytical maths here tells me that if you use that same rate, they'd all be gone in about 3 years.
But that has always been the problem with Nigel Farage's parties, right? That they are always the Nigel Farage show. And when UKIP had a load of MEPs, the turnover rate among them was extraordinarily high, far higher than it was for the, what were then the mainstream parties of Labour and Conservatives.
But he gains them as well. I mean, he's operating a one-in-one-out system, as far as I understand it.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's operating a situation where there is a real cult of leadership there, right? So, which... The Kent leader is a copycat example of that. She has this sort of authority. She has the authority, if anyone remembers Jackie Weaver from years ago. She definitely has the authority. She wants the authority. And if she does not get that authority, she boots you out. That is where some of those councillors, some of the reasons that they've left. So those 9 that I mentioned, the majority have been sacked, but others have been suspended. And there's a few that have left of their own volition. And some of those have done so because they don't agree with that sort of leadership cult.
I was going to ask if you have other favourite councils or other especially interesting stories that have cropped up during your first several months.
Doesn't everyone have a favourite local authority?
No, it's weird.
I don't know if favourite
worst. Richard Brooks has Teesside.
I think the thing with Rottenborough, are you talking about Reform now or
Rottenborough
generally?
No, general.
So in general, I think it's really difficult to pick a favourite or worst because, Rottenborough runs a whole range of, kind of cosy cronyism, bad conduct, huge amounts of money being spent. I think one of my recent favourites was over in Northern Ireland. So this was Lisburn and Castlereagh. So it's a borough in Northern Ireland. And this is a typical example of bad conduct. So this is a case where a councillor called Gary Hines was in a council meeting and he wanted to talk about a housing issue. And the chief exec, a guy called David Burns, said, no, could you wait? Gary Hines was not happy. They had a bit of a row, a bit of a verbal disagreement, which ended with Gary Hines, the councillor, spinning the chair of the chief executive in a bit of a hissy fit. That would be bad enough. But then on top of that, it got reported to the local government ombudsman over there, the public sector ombudsman, you know, rightly so. But that cost money, and also got reported to NACA. So the police were investigating. And this is council taxpayers' money. And
someone being spun on a chair.
Someone being spun on a chair. Now, I mean, I put it to you. Can you imagine if that happened in our office? So there's dissent. We're in the editorial conference meeting.
Our chairs would fall apart.
Our chairs
would fall apart.
The chairs would fall apart. But it's just not what you do, you know. And I think that is the serious point and why I love Rotten Boroughs, because underneath all of these allegedly silly stories, actually, there's a serious point to be made, which is that these are elected members, public money, it's public sector money, that's being wasted. And these are people who are held to account, except they behave like this.
Can I ask you, Sabah? Councillors themselves are not paid tremendously well. You do see officers and executives at councils receiving, you know, substantial payments and payouts, and that's all covered in Rotten Boroughs loads. Why do councillors matter? If the direction of party ownership, or if the overall party ownership changes, or if it's in no overall control, what difference does that make to me as a resident? I mean, my bins are still going to be collected.
Well, not if you live in Birmingham, Andy.
Good point.
No, you wouldn't be having any bins collected there.
But is that to do with the makeup of the council, or is it no?
So why do councillors matter?
Yeah.
You know, in a democracy, you need people based in communities who know their neighbourhoods and who are made up of lots of different political parties. So you have that range of representation, and their function is completely different to the officers, many of whom are on absolutely massive fat cat salaries. The people that we write about who are on their salaries, you know, they are entitled to that money because the rules dictate they can earn that amount of money. Mm. It just seems to most normal people absolutely outrageous that someone gets paid, you know, grand and a half a day to come in to an authority that is struggling financially, right, is in deficit, has borrowed hundreds of thousands of money from the government or been handed out funding to help it survive. And on top of that, you're then paying someone a grand and a half a day.
Yeah, but it feels so much like so many of the things they might have made decisions about in the past or had control over, they now don't. Which is why you do get changes of party happening and then people coming in and saying, oh, well, we're spending 75% of our budget on adult and children's social care.
I think one of the problems, I mean, both for Reform coming in, was the assumption that they would be able to make these sort of swinging cuts.
Absolutely.
And then finding out how little actually local authorities do control and
yes,
how much of it is with national government. But I think also there's a sort of democratic problem in that most council taxpayers and voters also don't understand whose responsibility is what. And it tends to get used in the same way that sort of elections to the European Parliament did, as well as a sort of protest vote and a judgment on the current national government, rather than actually, you know, this is a case where, you know, you can make a difference for the community. You can
absolutely
change things that you will actually see on the ground quite quickly.
Yeah, and I think just to go back to Reform on that, I think what's interesting with Reform is that a lot of these new councillors who've come in are very much towing the National Party line, which is that, you know, hard on immigration, you know, net zero, we're going to cancel all of that. Mm-hmm. But actually that is not relevant on a local level, because councils don't control immigration. They have nothing to do with the small boats, you know, in terms of stopping people from coming in. So
I
there
think
is
that was a big
disconnect.
Wake-up call both to them and to voters again, where they realised that actually they don't have the power to shut down these asylum hotels, even if they are in their local area.
Yeah,
that's
so
just not
absolutely. It's a perfect storm of, you know, the elected members not understanding what the role is, having no knowledge, no experience of local government or, you know, any kind of representing any kind of constituency, and that disconnect between what's happening on a national policy level and a local policy level in terms of what you can actually do.
And that changes as well, doesn't it? I mean, there's already, you know, a division between sort of borough councils and county councils with different responsibilities for different things. A lot of that is being changed. So there were a lot of the local elections weren't held last year because they're being turned into big mayoralties over. When I live down in Sussex, and we're about to be turned into a mayor for the entirety of both East and West Sussex, which seems like this enormous ungainly area.
Yeah.
Certainly, you're taking it away from sort of Hastings Borough Council, where I live, which
yes,
is very, very small and you'd think more manageable area, that we're going to be bundled in with sort of Chichester and Gatwick and Haywards Heath and things.
That's right.
Just seems to be
not Chichester.
not Gatwick.
There's awful people in Haywards Heath,
God, we're
a different language.
Inclusive society, Adam. You need to involve everyone in this. I think, you know, that this LGR thing, local government reorganisation, this is where we're dividing up local authorities in a different way, and it's meant to be efficient and it's meant to save money. The problem is is not only that I think most people don't understand what it is, why it's important, but then you've got the fighting in between different authorities because, well, we don't want to go with them because they are massively in deficit. And officers and elected members at loggerheads about how this should be done.
And there was the sort of first wave of mayors, wasn't there? The sort of Ken Livingstone wave, and then they were brought in. I mean, Bristol has already rejected the idea. They had a mayor for a while, didn't they?
Yes.
They've decided to get rid of not only him, but, you know, the concept of a mayor completely.
That's quite right, and for very good reason. And if you want to know about that, look back at Rotten Boroughs and what we've been doing in the Bristol.
And then didn't, I would say Doncaster elect a football mascot that was a monkey.
Hangus the monkey.
Hangus the monkey,
indeed. Yeah.
And then, I mean...
turned out to be rather good at it, didn't he?
I think it's really
he didn't wear the monkey costume the whole time he was mayor, I don't think.
No, right.
But it's interesting to think back of that first wave of mayors, you're right, under the Blair government. It was very much the kind of shiny new thing, and it's relatively speaking, quite a sexy thing in local government because, we don't have mayors. It's quite exciting. You've got these, and there's people are fighting and there's promotion, there's campaigns. And then you compare it to what's actually going on with what these people have done or not done.
Yeah, I mean, to expand on my point that I'm not just a West Sussexophobe, the point then seemed to be sort of devolution right down to kind of city level. And now it seems to have moved into these sort of macro authorities who are going to take on enormous kind of areas. And also the other thing that's come and is going as well is police and crime commissioners, isn't it? Which was brought in by the Cameron government.
So
never caught on. No one liked those.
No,
and they're off now.
No, well, and that's a huge thing. So I think there's about 40 of these commissioners, police, fire and crime commissioners, or police commissioners, depending where you are. And they have been said to be a failed experiment.
They were on quite a lot of money, weren't they?
Yes. So some of them, I think the average is about £76,000, but it goes up from that. Some of them are part-time, they've got deputies. These commissioners come in and they scrutinise what's going on with the police. Now, we have got a story coming up, which of course I can't go into because you have to buy the magazine to read it. But in Northamptonshire, for example, there's been all sorts of problems with the commissioner there. The previous commissioner got sacked, new commissioner came in and has been trying to turn around what the police are doing. Not quite gone to plan.
I guess notoriously reforming the police is very, very difficult. Even if you're Theresa May and you're coming in as Prime Minister, or you're Sadiq Khan trying to sack the head of the Met, these are really difficult things. The idea that someone could kind of bowl in and sort of go, right, lads, I've got some great ideas, and be listened to, I think,
absolutely
quite ambitious from the start.
Yeah, and I think there's also a cultural thing going on where you've got a lot of the commissioners are ex-elected members. They're coming in to oversee an organisation which is very different culturally. There's a clash there.
One of the issues I had with that right at the outset was it immediately divided along party political lines, that you were voting for either your Conservative Police and Crime Commission or your Labour one or whatever. And in a way, that's, I think, a problem with a lot of local government. And there's no actual real need for national parties to be involved in any of it, is there? I mean, would independent people who are concerned about local issues not be better than possibly party apparatchiks looking to go on to the House of Commons later in their careers?
Yeah, and funnily enough, a lot of the reform councillors who've quit or been suspended or expelled are becoming independent. So yes, I mean, a lot of local authorities have these independent independent Labour. So you're not really aligned with the national, but you politically and ethically you are left-leaning, so you're independent Labour. And maybe that's the answer. Maybe all these councillors we write about should be independent and therefore not be tied to their national political party lines. I don't know. Perhaps you've solved the whole problem.
There we are.
Nothing to write about in the next issue.
Excellent.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Now, for the next section of today's show, we're going to talk about a party that doesn't have a leader, or not an effective leader, and it doesn't narrow it down much, I know, so let's zero in and say we're talking about two particular parties, which I think are very closely linked. We're talking about the Democratic Party in the USA.
Yes.
And we're talking about your party in the UK. But these are parties which don't have leaders. Your party have just had their first conference and they've voted not to have one single leader.
Yes,
and
by the cursed ratio of almost pretty much 52 to 48.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
great. Terrific.
Really close to that.
And then the other thing is that the Democratic Party in the States doesn't have a leader. And I've always found it baffling. I've never understood, right, so you got your man in the White House over here and who?
Well, that is one of many downsides, I would say, to a presidential system. The other massive one, of course, being different from a prime ministerial system, being that there's no incentive for the party in government to get rid of a duff leader, right? Whereas right. What happens in a prime ministerial system is they go, well, thank you, Liz Truss, but you've delighted us long enough. And that can't happen in the same way in the States, even though even now in the remaking of the Republican Party, the party is still full of Republicans who are deeply unhappy about his leadership.
But sorry, just to labour the point,
yeah.
Why does a presidential system mean you can't have some kind of party leader, even in...
A leader of the opposition, essentially, is what you're talking about.
But what official position would they hold? Because that's the thing, that constitutionally we have her leader, you know, now His Majesty's loyal opposition.
Yeah.
They are in the Commons, they get the... questions at prime minister's questions, you know, like there is a kind of constitutional role for them. There's no version of that in America. Obviously there's the Senate and House minority leaders as they are at the moment. So they're the most senior Democrats in the legislature.
Yeah.
But they've got three branches of government and there's no executive version of them.
Right.
Although what's essentially happened is that people have tried to make themselves into that person through the medium of podcasts.
No. How's that going?
Well, actually not too bad. As it goes. So obviously a very tough and rough defeat for Kamala Harris at the last election. She's vibing around. She was thought to be running for governor of California but has declined to do that. Tim Walz, her running mate, is a governor of Minnesota. He's currently engaged in an ongoing feud with Donald Trump, but then who isn't?
Aren't we all? Yeah.
I really do not rate his chances of running again for a number of different reasons. But, you know, you have these kind of bigger figures emerging, mostly governors, actually. Mm. So people were for a time very excited about Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan. Gavin Newsom in California has just come off this big victory of redistricting, which we can talk about. I know you're excited about the gerrymander. But also people like Pete Buttigieg, who served in Biden's cabinet. You know, he was Secretary of Transportation. He's done a podcast round, essentially, to pop up. But J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, is another example of a governor who is having profile-raising battles with Trump. So that's what a lot of the Democratic governors are doing, is trying to turn themselves into the leader of the opposition by being the most effective anti-Trump voice, both in their own states and also on TV.
Are they doing that, though, specifically to take a run at being presidential candidate next time round? Because that is...
Who can say, Adam? They're not announcing. They're not running. Who can say what the ambitions of such
people
are?
It is. Is it not? I do find it slightly bizarre. I'm in a situation here of kind of arguing for a system of Kemi Badenoch, but having no effective leader of the opposition is quite weird, isn't it? I mean, we don't get a single figure who the party unites behind until the next round of presidential primaries, which is sort of two, 3 years away.
Yeah. There'll be after the midterms, the pack will begin to emerge. So that's November next year.
But is that why they have to have so bloody long choosing the candidate, so that they can actually show their people to the electorate and say, look, these are your potential leaders of the party?
There is a real idea that the primary season is about really lots of people, the core, various core votes for the parties getting their say. One of the big questions about next time is Pete Buttigieg is running. He hasn't announced it, but everyone knows that he is. He is gay, married to a guy, got two adopted kids. There is a question over whether the Democratic base, which is church-going Black Americans, often in southern states, are ready to vote for a gay candidate. And so people are very tense about him running. But in 2008, people were very tense about the idea about whether or not white Americans would vote for a Black Democrat. So one thing that you do is have that primary season, and Barack Obama emerged through that primary season as just being the the obvious superstar, and therefore people felt okay about sending him into the general. They didn't feel it was such a massive risk because he had proved himself through that long audition process.
Is it not a big disadvantage to whichever party is not in office at the moment that you have a president who is very well known, and most of the electorate are not paying a huge amount of attention to politics, but you know they will know who the president is.
Yeah, that's why they call it the bully pulpit. That is the great benefit of the American presidency, is you get to just be the one person who's in charge, and there's no one with an equivalent stature. Yeah. And quite notoriously, when you have the first president versus contender debate, that contender gets a bump in their polling ratings because for the first time they're on stage with the president.
Right.
They move up from this sort of amorphous realm of opposition to being like president versus would-be president. You know, the status increases. And that's often about that. You know, when you narrow it down to that one person who is the nominee from the other party, that's when they get Secret Service protection, for example, right? There is just a feeling at that point they ascend.
Yeah.
But this is compounded at the moment due to the fact that the Republicans control the presidency, but also the House and the Senate. Right. So they've got the trifecta. I'm going to use one of my many knobby American words in this. The midterms are such a big event that Trump has been very keen to consolidate his power. And basically, if they lose control of the House and the Senate in the midterms, that means that the opposition party gets to control the legislative agenda, so what gets voted on. They get to be in charge of the committees, which might do things like investigate some of the actions of Donald J. Trump Esquire, that sort of thing. So he's very keen to retain control. And so he's been pushing Republican states, red states, to change their congressional maps. And you do that by basically taking a swing district and finding a bit of red and kind of cobbling that on the side. That's
right.
That's the gerrymander.
Okay.
However, this has gone not as well as he thought. And I thought we could just take a moment to appreciate. I love it when someone does something that's really ethically wrong and then it backfires on them. And this one looks like it might do that. So it started really in Texas. They made another 5 seats that were really much more likely to swing to the Republicans there, even though the Democrats all left the state for the summer to try and avoid having to vote on it. But that has been stayed by a federal court, basically because someone in the Department of Justice, one of Trump's appointees, wrote a letter saying, we're doing this on racial terms, you know. And of course, one of the things that's very much not allowed is to do gerrymanders to reduce the power of minority voters. Under the Voting Rights Act, we're against that.
Right.
And so she probably should not have put that in writing. At the moment, the Justice Alito on the Supreme Court has let that map go forward for now, but it's not nailed on that will happen.
Right.
So that's 5 seats the Republicans were hoping to have. And then what happened in response to that is California, a very blue state, went, well, see how you like
anything you can do.
The gerrymander becomes the gerrymandee. And they've come up with a new map that adds 5 Democratic-leaning seats. And
right.
being California, they had to vote on this. And they love a ballot measure. So Gavin Newsom, who very much does want to be president, put this to the people. The only people opposing it really was Arnie, who was very in favour of the independent redistricting, but he came out and said, terminate the gerrymander, and then didn't really do any other campaigning. So Gavin Newsom won. And so, sure enough, you're in a situation where the Texas one might not go through, the California one definitely has gone through.
Right.
And then places like Indiana, Donald Trump is massively pressuring the lawmakers there. But I thought this was an interesting information point. There's an Indiana state senator who responded very badly to Trump sent a True Social post over Thanksgiving in which he called Kamala Harris's running mate Tim Walz. He said he was retarded because of all the things that he was doing in Minnesota. And this guy did a tweet that said, I've got a daughter with Down syndrome. Words have consequences. I will be voting no on the gerrymander. And this is very rare. The Republican Party, and particularly people at lower levels who don't want to get firebombed, I mean, people in Indiana are talking about their threats to their physical safety, don't oppose Donald Trump. You know, you get primaried by MAGA people or you get threats to your office and your home. And this was interesting to me that this guy said, oh, I'm sorry, there are still some lines in American politics. We don't use language like that. I wonder if it's the first cracks beginning to show and a lot of people thinking, we're going to get walloped in the midterms, the incumbent party traditionally does.
Mm.
And at some point, unless he really does run for a third term, we're looking forward to this post-Trump future.
Mm-hmm.
6 months, a year ago, it looked completely hopeless for the Democrats. But this is the kind of thermostatic equilibrium of politics.
So when asked last month, who is the Democrats' leader, do you know who won? Have a guess.
Well, I'd say Newsom, Gavin Newsom, Governor of California, has the most name recognition. Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama,
no.
Oprah,
Kamala?
Don't know.
Oh,
don't know.
Yeah.
Don't know came in a thumping 21%. 16% did say Kamala Harris. In third place, nobody. So
I mean, don't know Kamala Harris.
Don't know nobody.
Isn't that the answer to the who leads your party?
Actually, that's true. Maybe Kamala Harris has got. She's not got anything else on. Maybe she could run for the leadership of your party. Let's move on.
So, just for any international listeners to this podcast, we have a party in the UK called Your Party, which is our newest party. It's a very left-wing party, maybe explicitly a socialist party. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hugely exciting, got a lot of grassroots energy behind it. And the two leaders are Jeremy Corbyn and Zara Sultana. And just for international listeners, I would say, imagine Bernie Sanders and AOC, but a very cut price version of that, and they do not get along.
But also, they're not the two co-leaders as a result of this.
Which is probably a good thing, because they really don't get on with each other.
So they've had a conference in which they've elected not to have a leader.
Yeah, and
at least they've agreed on that, though. That's the one thing they agreed on, that they won't have a leader.
Well, they'll have co-leaders that are chosen by a long process that starts with an executive committee. Mm-hmm. They will allow people to be members of other parties as well as them. It's going to be tricky, because we've been talking a lot on this podcast in the last couple of weeks about the success of the Greens under Zach Polanski. Mm. And that is a party that moved from a dual leader model to just going, maybe let's just let one guy or one woman have a crack at it, and then it'll be a lot more easy to identify the party with a person and a set of positions. The thing I would say that I really took away from watching maybe too much of the live stream of the Your Party conference is that there is a difficult split between the anti-colonialist, pro-Palestine bits of the coalition and the socially liberal, younger, whiter activist part of the coalition. So already two members of the Gaza Independence, two Muslim MPs, male Muslim MPs, resigned from your party, say, essentially because they're more socially conservative. They said they had some concerns about like the definition of woman, all that kind of stuff. And they were repeatedly attacked from the podium as being transphobes. By younger members, you know, and the chair kept having to say, well, actually, we're here to debate the standing orders. Like,
right.
Thank you
for that. But those are the two who've already left, the splitters.
Yeah, and that's sort of also a bit where, I mean, Corbyn sits uneasily between the two groups, right? And he did, when he was leader of the Labour Party, have to bridge this divide. Mm. But essentially, your party grew out of these Gaza Independents, five male Muslim MPs plus Jeremy Corbyn. And then Zara Sultana, who is also from that background, but is much more socially liberal. Gen Z about it, kind of bolted onto that, and it's a slightly unhappy mixture.
She boycotted the first day of your party's conference, didn't she?
Yeah.
And that was specifically over, this amused me, the problem always for parties on the left and for the left side of Labour has always been entryism and kind of Trotskyist sects trying to sort of worm their way in through membership and then affect things in that way. She was saying specifically right at the outset, we've got to have entryism. Anyone from any set, Socialist Workers Party, whatever other Trotskyists want, they've got to be a part of it, and that's got to be part of the foundation of the party, is that we allow these people in. So good luck trying to decide anything with no leader and a committee in charge, and then different parties kind of worming their way in there as well.
Didn't she also say that it's a 40-year project, this movement? By then they'll have agreed.
That's good, like the years in the desert.
Yeah, so it's not a quick fix. You know, this is a long-term...
Pretty sure that's what Change UK was saying back in the day. Do you remember them?
Jeremy's going to be
Manor and all that.
Jeremy's going to be 114 years old by the time this 40-year project is.
He'll still be making the same speech. People will still be chanting, "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn." It'll be fine.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Now, as the party winds down... no, it's only winding up because there's something incredibly exciting happening in British media, isn't there, Adam? This is huge.
Yeah. It's the sale of the Telegraph. How long have we been talking about this? This has actually been running longer than this podcast now, the attempt to sell off the Telegraph.
It's quite... Yeah, you do get this sort of sense of, oh gosh, are they... It's like seeing someone...
It was July 2023 when Lloyds Bank swooped in and said to the Barclay family, you can't pay your debts anymore. We're going to take your newspapers off of you.
So the Telegraph has been languishing without an owner for good couple of years now, and there have been various bids that have come and gone. It's emerged in the last few days that the new prospective owner of the Telegraph, he's put in a bid, is... Viscount Rothermere, current owner of the Daily Mail and the parent company, the Daily Mail and General Trust.
Cameron, can I have a quick recap? So basically, after that happens, they then try and sell it to a Qatari-backed fund.
No. They initially Lloyds Bank tried to put it up for auction. Before they could do that, a fund called Redbird IMI swept in and said, "We will pay off the debts of the Barclays in return for receiving the newspapers and, at that point, the Spectator as well, the magazine, in kind of security for those debts." Then the government intervened because there were protests across the newspaper industry and from journalists on the Telegraph themselves saying we can't possibly have a fund which is backed by the government of the United Arab Emirates coming in and taking control of a British newspaper, and everyone agreed this would be terrible. So the law, the whole thing was frozen. Ever since then, the Telegraph has been effectively being run by some independent directors who were the people brought in by the bank in the first place, so not people who necessarily know much about running newspapers, which has effectively meant that editorially they've been allowed to go completely feral and do whatever they wanted to do, which they have taken on with great gusto under editor Chris Evans. There have been, to my my reckoning,
not the Chris Evans,
further.
The DJ, or the one who was Captain America.
No, it, no, is, the neither it is the Captain
oh,
America
it is
one.
Captain
yeah.
America. Okay,
they might have done a better job. Who knows?
But this is a very interesting point that we've made somehow in all three sections, is the Telegraph have not really had a leader. Mm. Well, they've run lots of leaders over the last 2.5 years. You've got the Your Party thing. You know, we've got a
this
sense
is your
emerging.
Policy of actually, you always come back to the Belgian government, having they didn't have one for 3 years. Everything was fine.
What if we just... Maybe, am I an anarchist?
No, but there was a terror cell in Belgium, and I remember thinking, oh, maybe actually a year and a half is too long not to have a government.
And there's Alistair Heath and Alison Pearson at the Telegraph, so, I mean, that's just
okay.
the rough equivalent.
So, but look, the ancient history is over. Our slightly unstable friend has finally found a new man, and the new man she's found is Viscount...
One of the old people who were originally going to bid for it in the first place.
Viscount,
yes.
Rothermere, who tried to go out with our friend, I'm going to continue the analogy, 20 years ago, he tried to buy the papers, but didn't managed to...
He's had two goes so far. He tried to buy them originally when the Barclays got them from Conrad Black, that other interesting businessman, in 2004 when he lost control of the Telegraph Group. He came back for another go at the initial auction before it went to the UAE. At that point, as I say, the law was changed so that no foreign state would be able to take a stake in a newspaper initially. At that point, the Daily Mail Group, Lord Rothermere's group, dropped out because they were talking to the Qataris and to various other governments in the Middle East about bringing some money in to make a bid for them at that point. That law has now been tweaked so that foreign governments are allowed to take 15% of a British newspaper group now. But Lord Rothermere, is saying that he's not going to need any foreign state funding at all. None of that will be involved, which does beg the question, where is the money actually coming from? Because the other strange thing about this is that he appears to be offering the full $500 million, which the current sort of impotent owners who aren't allowed to do anything for it want to pay back what they paid in the first place.
But
which
no one thinks it's worth
months,
that, right?
Even the Telegraph had been admitting that they are not worth that. They've been saying that a more realistic valuation of the newspaper group is sort of 300 to 350 million.
Why is he offering the full whack then? Sorry to ask a really basic question.
It is a very odd question, isn't
most
it?
Of us barter.
Yeah, it does seem a little odd. I mean, the Telegraph is profitable if he's looking at a long-term kind of investment in it. You know, there are ways of making that money back. There will be obvious, as we like to call them in the business world, synergies, or as we like to call them in the journalism world, lots of people getting sacked, particularly if I were working in the sort of back room kind of things with, you know, the IT departments or HR or the business side of
or
either of those
newspapers.
Or even
the pitcher desk and the subs desk, right? Like, that's the classic. Let's integrate the back room. Yeah.
I was going to kind of come on to that, because the other thing that's been going on at the Daily Mail Group over the last year, as chronicled in the Street of Shame pages since January, is massive job cuts at the Daily Mail, which is Britain's best-selling newspaper and still sells an enormous number of copies. So the Daily Mail, Mail on Sunday, and the newspaper website formerly known as the Mail Online, now known as dailymail.co.uk, were sort of shunted together and a load of duplications and staff were got rid of at that point in January. They've since made big job cuts at all the other places that they own as well. So that's the IE newspaper, which people sort of forget is part of the Mail Group. It's in a sort of separate wing of the company to be kept separate. Along with New Scientist, which they also own. And then last week, literally a day before it emerged that he was offering hundreds of millions of pounds for the Daily Telegraph, journalists at the Metro were told that an awful lot of them were also at risk of redundancy because they need to make massive cost savings kind of across the board. Again, those cost savings probably still not quite enough to raise that 500 million we're talking about here.
Is the idea to try and create sort of another massive media block in the style of Rupert Murdoch's, you know, Times, Sun, formerly News of the World,
this is
and
the fascinating
Sky,
thing.
All
Actually,
of that.
It's going to be much, much bigger than anything Rupert Murdoch has ever owned. Rupert Murdoch was enormous first back in the 80s when he took over the Times, and it was involved the Monopolies and Mergers Commission as then, because he was going to be taking over two major daily newspapers and three Sunday newspapers. This will bring together, when we've just mentioned them, it's going to be four separate daily newspapers and a couple of Sundays as well. So it, in terms of a block, and in terms of circulation as well, Press Gazette has done some calculations, they're going to be a million ahead of Murdoch's titles in terms of circulation. Combined circulation of everything, if this deal goes through and the Mail Group take over the Telegraph and keep all of the titles they've got at the moment, 2.5 million copies a day they're going to be selling. The other thing that's changed enormously is, of course, is paper circulation is a very different beast now to what it was in the 1980s. These are all essentially digital operations. You know, their websites and a lot of them are international facing. And Rothermere has said specifically that the Telegraph, that's the bit he sees as ripe for exploitation. They're going to turn it into very much an American-facing thing. They think there's a big market out there for a slightly classier than Fox News, kind of broadsheety type, but very, very right-wing coverage, which is what is the direction the Mail is moving in. It's quite MAGA at the moment under Chris Evans.
But the Telegraph's a sort of ABC One version of that, isn't it? That's the kind of heritage foundation sort of for the elites, you know, for the kind of... The Telegraph always used to be known as the paper for the sort of retired colonel in the shires, and those people in the American context now are MAGA, right? Whereas the American Mail is still pursuing its, like, it's very strongly aimed at, like, middle, particularly lower middle class women, right? It's very
I think they'd see their competition as being things like People magazine and US Weekly. They're much more kind of celeb focused on their American kind of facing stuff. So I think if they've got any sense, and certainly Rothermere is talking about keeping them as two very separate and distinct businesses, although obviously there will be those combinations to be done on staffing between the two of them. Politically, they're coming from a sort of similar sort of area.
Can I just check, is Sir Herbert Gusset now MAGA?
If he's retired Colonel Herbert Gusset, you know, 5th Platoon of the whatevers, then yeah, he's got a massive American flag in his driveway. He's in an SUV.
Oh, no.
He's in the Gusset wagon, which does about like 2 miles to the gallon.
Oh,
his grandchildren definitely bought him one of those red MAGA hats a few Christmases ago and got him to pose for a selfie wearing it backwards awkwardly, didn't they?
Yeah. No, this is so sad.
I just like the idea of the sidebar of shame in the Telegraph website.
Yeah, I don't think
retired colonels and packing on the PDA. I mean,
but presumably, when this was first mooted, this merger, Lord Rothermere wrote a piece in the Times, which was a sort of weird thing to see that happening, or was interviewed in the Times.
He was interviewed, yeah.
Saying essentially, his argument was, thing is, no one reads newspapers anymore, so it's fine if I own loads of them. I think that was an encapsulation.
We've got a strange
argument.
Situation where the Telegraph are saying we're not worth all this money, and the man who wants to buy them is saying, oh, no one's interested in newspapers anymore.
Right, but essentially the argument was like, but people are getting their news from a really wide range of sources, like TikTok and social media. So although this looks like it's edging close, not to a monopoly, but certainly to a huge market share, it isn't really.
But those things are not quite market in the same way. That's the thing.
With Lord Rothermere.
Yeah. It is likely that Lisa Nandy, the Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, is going to intervene in this one, and probably, as happened with the last big takeover we had, was when Trinity Mirror took over the Express titles to create Reach PLC. And she ordered investigations by the Competition and Markets Authority and Ofcom into that and the effect that that would have on the market. That was way through. Again, that was an enormous share of the market. That was way through partly because those papers were kind of at the opposite end of the political spectrum. Daily Mirror, traditionally Labour-supporting. Express, traditionally very sort of traditionally old-school conservative. hasn't really carried on that way, given that they're sharing enormous numbers of their pages now and have kind of been shunted together in a way that is not working out brilliantly for all the journalists.
It's not a happy ship, it sounds.
Very definitely. There's very few newspapers out there that are particularly happy ships at the moment, but certainly the ones owned by Reach PLC are particularly unhappy and slightly subaquatic at the moment.
That said, though, it is a good sign about the healthiness of our press and democracy that Lisa Nandy will refer this to a kind of arm's length thing, right? Whereas if you think about, we've talked about this in the last pod, one of the things that Donald Trump has absolutely done is just blocked media mergers that he doesn't like because they've been mean to him personally. So if this were America, Lisa Nandy would be going, I think we could stand to hear a few nice things about Lisa Nandy, the Telegraph, if you'd like to get approval for this.
Right.
Couple of things just to add to that. We've talked about how most readership has migrated online and the difficulties of measuring that, which is something that Lisa Nandy's going to have to get her head around. In terms of profits, an enormous amount of it still comes from sales of paper copies of newspapers. It's something like 75% of the Reach titles. I think it's up there. The Telegraph, I think, is something like 80%. It's an enormous amount of money still comes. Well, they're quite expensive now, newspapers. And you've got a kind of loyal readership who are getting them delivered to their door every day still.
Yeah.
They are an older readership. They are, sadly, you know, the nature of mortality means they're not going to be around for all that much longer. So that is always going down. But that is certainly what brings the money in, much, much more than any online advertising in this country has ever done. One of the reasons everyone is keen on exploiting an American market for British newspapers, and all of them now have, certainly all of the tabloids, have launched specific US-facing websites, which are sort of separate operations to the British ones, is that in America, there's some valuable advertising out there which people are willing to put on newspaper and magazine websites. You can actually make some money off online advertising out here, which is a thing that no one has ever found a way of making work over here.
It is also the case, isn't it, that quite a lot of people in the States like reading about rainy Porridge Island. I think that's a...
Well, they like
the
that,
New York
they
Times
like reading
constantly
about
doing that.
The hellhole that is London or Birmingham and how we're all living under Sharia law as well. There is a big sell, you know, how awful the old country has become.
But
and
those
how terribly
of us that still live here, because the rest of us are off to Dubai, aren't we? So.
Absolutely, we are. Yeah.
I mean, you can't overstate that. There is a kind of weird place for Britain in the American, like, American MAGA right imagination. I mean, to the extent that Elon Musk described us as being like the hobbits in the Shire, and we're like, and therefore we didn't realise that the orcs were coming and Sauron was coming, right?
Yeah.
And they need to be defended by the men of Gondor, which I think is him with a Tesla.
Wishes he was Aragorn, doesn't he? Yeah.
He's barely Gimli. Man in charge of army of trolls.
Yeah. Meat's back on the menu, lads. Sorry.
And the other thing I would just say is that the future does seem to be these larger and larger media groups and these huge, huge takeovers. I mean, even to come back to Rupert Murdoch, he realised a few years ago that with Fox and Sky, he was just not at the sort of scale where he could compete with the really big streamers and the really big studios. Mm. Fox was sold on to Disney, Sky to Comcast. Now we've got Sky, as part of Comcast, looking at buying up ITV, their broadcast side of things. So I think the future seems to be in everything getting bigger and bigger in order to compete with, you know, those tech giants like kind of Facebook and Google and people like that. So we're going to see a lot more, I think, of this kind of like consolidation and growth of media brands going on.
Well, I, for one, am just hugely relieved that the Telegraph's going to be owned by someone at least at Viscount level. I just think that feels like a sort of...
You're reassured by that.
It's as it should be, isn't it?
It's for right, a baronet, yeah. But I'm reassured.
OK, that's it for this episode of Page 94. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Adam, Helen and Saba. If you would like more Private Eye in your life, the thing to do is go to your local newsagent or T.G. Jones. Just thought I'd give them a little shout out and buy a copy. If you want to find out even more, you can go to private-eye.co.uk and get yourself a subscription. What a good Christmas present it would make for someone in your life.
Or even the annual, I hear.
Oh, what a good idea.
If you have two friends in your life, that's all your Christmas problems sorted, isn't it?
Easy. Brilliant. We'll be back again in a fortnight with another of these. And the only remaining thanks are to Matt Hill of Rethink Audio for producing. Bye for now.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.